You're listening to the public feed of Carefree Highway Revisited, which includes only a portion of this conversation. To hear the complete discussion, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or see the show notes for details.
The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
Early in the morning, when the dew is on each and every rosebud, you will find me gone. So knock me down and pick me up and knock me down again. Break my heart, steal my gold, and slander my good name. This is Carefree Highway Revisited, the show that celebrates Gordon Lightfoot's music song by song, a proud member of the That's Not Canon podcast network. I'm your host, Mike Messner, and with me today is a fellow Lightfoot fan from Maryville, Tennessee, and a musician in his own right, Will Krueger. Will, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. It's a pleasure to be on your show. I listened to many, many episodes, so it's a real honor.
Well, the pleasure is mine, and thank you very much for saying so. So I always open with the question to all my guests, same question. How did you first get into Gordon Lightfoot's music?
Well, I started playing guitar about 1965. I was 14 years old, and I think Peter, Paul, and Mary were really on my radar at the time. And one of the songs from See What Tomorrow Brings, which came out about that year, that album, they had Early Morning Rain on. And that's, I think, the first inkling I got about Gordon Lightfoot. And I think I started investigating, and I bought the original Lightfoot album in mono, by the way, wasn't even in stereo. So that was my introduction to Gordon. And of course, my voice range works really well with him. So I started doing a lot of cover songs.
Makes perfect sense. Good. What do you like about Lightfoot's music generally?
Well, you know, I'm a songwriter myself, and I always emphasize melody. The lyrics are great, but if you don't have a good melody to kind of draw you in to listen to the lyrics, and Gord was a master at that. Every song, you knew exactly what the song was by the intro. Nothing was the same. It varied. And, you know, later on when I started getting to know a little bit about his background, he had quite a classical background. He took a lot of emphasis on his lyric writing and the melody and that type of stuff. And his music was just great.
Yeah, he's one of the few contemporary artists who actually writes his own charts. That's a point that I've made in other episodes. I don't know about too many other modern musicians who actually still do that, and maybe it's a lost art. I don't know.
We just write chords,
right?
That's about it.
Yeah, right. And the melodies, they kind of stick in our head, and you know, if we ever want anybody to publish them, then you know, we get somebody to transcribe them. But most people these days just can't do that. What about live performances? What's been your experience with seeing Gordon live?
Well, I've only had the pleasure to be at two of Gord's live performances. One was at the Opera House in Chicago. And then there was I can't remember the name of it. It was another club outside of Chicago. They had a round stage at the time. And the first one I went with my cousin, because I think I was, that was probably, gosh, it had to be like 69, 70 when I saw. Oh, I remember it was just when Sit Down, Young Stranger, and you know what album I'm talking about, they ended up changing the name. So he had just joined Reprise Records, which was a new company started, I believe, by Frank Sinatra. And that album had just come out. And so first time I heard If You Could Read My Mind was at that concert.
So you were there to see him a couple of times. Have you ever met him?
No, I never have. I've never had the pleasure of meeting him. No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nor have I. All right. Well, let's get into the song a little bit. You and I talked about the origins of the song a little bit before we started recording. We'll talk about that in a minute or two.
Yeah.
The reason that I love this song so much is that it is so simple, but it's so perfect. He sometimes uses more sophisticated language in his writing than he did in this particular song, but this just lays it out. He's not trying to show off his mastery of vocabulary. It's a lament. It's a poem. It's pure folk music. And there's not a misplaced word or a misplaced note anywhere in the song. And the fact that he was that skillful at it on his very first album, because this album was recorded in 1964.
Yes.
It's his first recording, and he's already mastered the genre so much that it just absolutely blows me away.
Interesting, too, because I, and correct me if I'm wrong, this was the days before Red Shea and Pee-wee Charles. I don't know if he had his bandmates then, because it was like his first recording with United Artists, right?
Well, they did not play on this record.
No,
we're going to talk about who actually played on it, you know, a little bit later. I don't know if he had started working with Red and with John Stockfish at that point. John was the original bass player before he turned it over to Rick Haynes. So I'm not absolutely sure, but I think it probably wasn't too far along happened.
I love the song. It had a kind of a bouncy feel to it. And it was just a good, fun song to play. And I've heard it many, many times. And I remember I was listening to the United Artists collection, and that came up. And I says, you know, I'm going to try to do a good cover song to it. So in anticipation to this interview, I go, well, I better find out the background, because on your episodes, you're always going back to the origins of stuff. And you and I had talked about this before. I couldn't find anything exactly what it was. And you had mentioned it was around the time that he wrote Steel Rail Blues.
Right.
So it was in that kind of a genre. But what a great album that was. Remember the song, Oh Linda? It was just a stand-up bass. That mm-hmm. was all that was in the song. I mean, there were some really good jewels in that particular album.
Yeah. And at some point, I'd love to do a show just about that album where I get, you know, a whole bunch of people on a panel. Getting back to you, though, and your connection to the song, why did you want to talk about it today in particular?
Well, I like Gordon Lightfoot. I like talking with other people that know a lot about that artist, and we have a lot in common in that. I just love the song. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to learn that song. And I've done that with many Gordon Lightfoot songs. You know, Song for a Winter's Night, Don Quixote, Edmund Fitzgerald, Canadian Railroad Trilogy. I cover that. Incidentally, I do what I call a folk legend tribute show, and I include not only Gord's music, but James Taylor, John Denver, and Simon and Garfunkel in those. So those kind of songs I like to preview in my show. I can do them solo, but if I get a chance and there's enough money in the show, I can actually get a band together and really do it justice.
Fantastic. And it's always good just to talk about a song, you know, that we absolutely love, and particularly if you've done your own rendition of it. What to you would be the best setting for listening to this song? Would it be at a certain time of day, a certain location, doing something? What do you think?
Well, you know, Michael, I guess nowadays when I get a chance to listen to the music, you know, years ago, we'd buy a big stereo system, a rack system, and we'd have these big speakers and we'd sit back in our chair and we listen to the music. If you think about it, most of the time, at least for me, is when I'm in the car. You know, that's when I listen. That's when I probably listen to most of the stuff. And we had recently moved down to Maryville, Tennessee, which is just on the east side of the Smoky Mountains. We're like about 50 minutes away. So I could look out my window and I can see the mountains. And so I was just doing this the other day. I was out on my deck and listening to the song and just kind of immersing myself. So I guess the answer to your question, any place is good to listen to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, I agree with you. I think if I could set the perfect scene for myself, it would be waking up by Lake Tahoe, right near the Sierra Nevadas, looking at the Sierras and, you know, just listening to that, because that's the setting really of at least the latter part of the song, where he's going up into the mountains to get away from a memory or getting away from anything else.
Now, it mentioned seven miles to Seven Lakes, way up among the pines in some hidden valley where the Twirling River twines. What a great lyric right there. I mean, just a play of words. But I was trying to find where Seven Lakes was. And there's a Seven Lakes area in New York, in upper New York. But in doing my research, I think it's a it's a place where you have to fly in to go fishing. Is that, do you know at all where that might be geographically?
Well, I know where he was heading when he wrote the song. He was going up to a place in northern Ontario called Moosonee, which is way out there. I mean, it's I don't even think it was a census distinctive place until fairly recently. And there are a whole lot of small bodies of water around. I think it's right on Hudson Bay, okay, which of course is a salt water, you know, area. It's not a lake in the typical sense. But
when I think of Canada, though, I think every place in Canada is way out there.
Yeah, quite a few of them are. That's true. There are quite a few small areas, but I don't even know if they'd be called lakes. And I don't know what the significance of the 16 miles is, except that maybe he kind of did a radius of where Moosonee was and said, okay, well, within 16 miles, there are seven bodies of water that might be called lakes.
And a lot of times, Mike, sometimes when we're writing songs, 16 miles just fits in the lyric. It has nothing to do with the reality of where he's going. A lot of times, sometimes you look at songs and you go, what was the meaning of that? Well, lyrically, it just fit the song, you know, sometimes.
It could be. I mean, the other one that I think of is, you know, 16 tons, and that may have had, you know, Tennessee Ernie Ford, you may have had some significance of that, but that's neither here nor there. Well, that's all the time we have for Here in the Public Feed. If you'd like to hear the rest of this conversation, along with all of our other extended and bonus episodes, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or at fmpods.com. You can see the show notes for details.